Thank you for joining us for Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, your host for this hour. Our next guest says his dad gave him his first camera back in the sixth grade, and he's carried one ever since. Cameron Burns has lived in Juno for 45 years, and gosh, you can imagine how many pictures he's taken during that time. But this month, you'll have a chance to maybe see the tip of the iceberg of all of those photographs at the Juno Artist Gallery, where Cameron is this month's featured artist. Well, Cameron, I dare ask, how many photographs do you think you may have taken since you moved to Juno?
Well,
not to put you on the spot, but...
Well, probably well over 100,000. It could be twice that many, but how many are good is something else. How many you actually want to keep is something else. If you shoot whales, you're looking for one nice shot, but you might shoot 50. So the number doesn't mean a lot.
Mm-hmm. But I would imagine when you're getting together a gallery, a presentation, and the Juno Artist Gallery is a small gallery, but still it's kind of neat that they're going to feature you this month. How do you go about choosing what you're going to show out of 100,000 photos?
Yeah, the Juno Artist Gallery, I'm a member of it, so I exhibit there all the time. I have a spot there, and I've been there for 8 years. And we feature an artist of the month every month, and I usually do April. And then you get a little extra extra area to play with, and I've made good use of that. But my pictures are up there all the time, some of the best ones and some of the ones that I like.
Well, one of the things I've noticed is you have a lot of nature photographs, and I imagine that those are particularly popular. How is it that you focus on nature photographs, whales, birds?
Well, I'm really lucky. In the summer times, I work for Gastineau Guiding Company. I'm one of their guides. The tour that I specifically do is a photography tour. So I meet the cruise ships and take small groups, 14 maximum, often 8 to 10 people. And we go hike through the woods, and then we go out whale watching. So I'm on the water 4 to 5 days a week all summer long. I mean, what is that? That'd be 100 times I'm on the water. And hiking the trails. So you get to know the season as it changes and the animals on the water and all sorts of things pretty well doing that.
So I imagine that the tourists are all antsy because they've got to have that fabulous million-dollar shot to show their relatives. What advice do you give them?
Well, one thing I try to get them to focus on is to pre-visualize the shot a little bit. You know, that's really hard for the tourists. They get all excited and just want to aim their camera out there. But before the whale shows up, I try to get them to think about the foreground, the background. Tourists are great at cutting off the tops of mountains, things like that. And I say, well, look at the scene first and then frame it up that way, and then imagine a whale or a stellar sea lion or an orca coming into that scene. So we don't want our pictures to look like everyone else's pictures. Look for something different in your shot.
Well, they say that there is value in teaching because you reinforce what's important to you, or maybe even bring that out of yourself, that realization that this is what I do, this is what I'm good at. So for you, in teaching photography to the tourists, are there things that come through you that might not have otherwise?
Well, I've always been a natural teacher. I used to work for KTOO-TV, and we used a lot of volunteers running the cameras and the audio boards for our TV productions. And I would, in the 9 years I was there, I would often be the one that would teach them how to work the audio board, how to mic somebody up, how to work the controls on the camera, how to think about the shots and the lighting and where to stand and things like that. And I've been working with tourists many times. I've had tourists say, oh, you must be a teacher. And I go, well, Yes and no. I mean, I teach you and I teach other things, but I've never been a teacher, never worked in a school.
So is there something about the art of photography itself that makes one a teacher when they're a practitioner of photography?
Well, I think most, I think most photographers are perfectly willing to share what they know. And I work with, in the summer, I'm not the only photographer. Our company hires about 14 or 15, and we are all sharing things all the time. You know, so you get an idea, you get a picture. How did we do that? How do we do that? It's a, and then when I hear people that are new at it or the people who come on my tour, if I have 14 on the tour, they won't all be into photography. I'll probably have three that are really into it and two that are sort of into it. And I like to quickly identify those people and then really give them something new to think about in what they're doing. So.
Well, of course, they've got so much to think about with new scenery. Their sensories, their sensory perception may be overloaded at that point. Do you see that where people just get so excited they can't really think clearly about taking a photograph?
All the time. I call it spray and pray. You know, where they just set their camera to shoot really fast and just they're just spraying the scene with shots, which they're later going to have to sort and realize. Okay, they've been on this boat trip and they've taken 2,500 shots, and of that 2,500, maybe five are really good, and of that, hopefully one is a zinger. That's not putting yourself into the picture. That's just using the ability of these cameras, these digital cameras, to shoot the 3,000 pictures in an hour. So.
Well, you know, there are photographs, and then there are photographs, and some of those that are really special are the ones that capture the moment. For you, is there a difference in those kind of photographs and how you take them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I take a lot less pictures. Think about my tour. I take a lot less pictures now than I did 10 years ago because I'm looking for the one that's going to rise above the 300 of this version that I already have. So I slow down and I try to get my people to slow down too. I say, watch this whale and think about when is the peak of action. And then the next time a whale comes up, wait for that peak of action. You don't need 15 shots of a whale diving. You know, three well-timed shots are better. And then you'll, doing that, you'll understand the animal more than just your camera.
Well, one of your photos that I just love, and I will post it up on the web with your permission after this show, but it's of the Matanuska Ferry and the whales. I don't know. I'm not a whale mind reader, but it looks like the whales are watching the ferry.
They are bubble net feeding, and that particular group of whales had 17 whales in it. And this is a pretty good example of the way I shoot. Although people say to me when they see that particular picture, but many others, you know, oh, that was a lucky shot. I said, there's nothing lucky about that. I saw that picture developing, you know, 15 minutes before I pushed the button. We were out on the water following these whales bubble net feeding, and then way off in the distance coming down from Haines or Skagway, here comes the ferry. And right away, in my mind, I put the two together. I said, boy, if that whale gets, I mean, if that ferry gets right behind this bubble net group, if this bubble net group comes up next to the ferry, I've got the shot. It's probably not going to happen, but in my head, I already envisioned it. And I just focused on the whales. I just stuck with the whales and filmed them as they came up, always leaving room for the ferry as it got closer and closer. And wouldn't you know, in this case, they bubble netted right next to the ferry. It was just the perfect shot, but it wasn't a lucky shot. It was something I had already seen 10 minutes ago and put together. And that's how many of my shots are. Most of the time when you do that, it doesn't work. you pick the perfect background, you talk to the whale and say, come up over here, and they ignore you and swim off somewhere else. But once in a while, it all comes together.
Well, I do love some of the moments that once in a while come together for you. And you sent me a photograph that I just love. It looks like an eagle that's sitting on a rock in conversation with a bird. And I was going to ask you, is that a raven?
Yeah, that's a raven. Yeah. The ravens like to harass the eagles. You'd think a big eagle, you know, could dispatch a raven, but they don't. They just get annoyed and eventually fly away. And this eagle was sitting on the rock, and I came up to shoot him. And then this raven sat down and just was annoying, just sat there and looked at the eagle and squawked at him and kind of hopped a little closer to him. And eventually that eagle fly away in annoyance. But that's a common thing around here, is to get ravens harassing eagles, chasing them around, and good photo opportunities in that scenario.
Well, that is iconic, given all the Tlingit heritage of ravens and eagles.
It absolutely
the importance
is. You
of
can
that
see
is...
where the native stories came from when you're out watching this kind of stuff.
So if you gave that photo a caption, what would it be?
Oh, typical harassment by a local raven or something like that.
It is kind of interesting that such a mighty bird could be sort of held hostage by a raven.
Yeah, I know. And they do it. They chase them through the sky. They'll actually dive down. I've got pictures of ravens actually making contact with the eagles or pulling on their tails when they're on the tide flats getting salmon and things like that.
So you have talked about how you got your very first camera back in the sixth grade. My goodness.
Yes.
And what kind of camera were you lucky to get from your
father?
Well,
it was a 35 millimeter camera, an old Kodak reflex camera that my dad had, and he had a couple of lenses. He was a family photographer, took lots of nice pictures of our families and vacations, and he dropped it one day. Well, I think we were in Utah. And you could no longer change lenses. The lens that was on it got stuck on it. So he went out and bought a new one and put this one on the shelf. And I started borrowing it and stealing it and sneaking it out, which he knew. And that became my camera for my first couple of years, and eventually started buying my own gear over the time.
Well, do you ever take that camera out and use it? Do you still have it? I guess I should ask.
Oh, no, no. It died a sad death. I was at the top of a long cement stairway one day. The strap gave way, and it bounced down. Every time it hit, the pieces flew off it. But I do have the last roll of film that was into it, that was in the camera, which I kept pretty much every shot I've ever taken, so.
Well, my son was a bit of a shutter bug when he was a kid, and this was just before the advent of an iPhone. And of course, film is so expensive, and you want your children to experiment and enjoy photography. But I'm sure that your father, as you had this bug, kind of worried about the cost of all the film that you would be shooting up.
Well, when I started getting serious about it, I was buying my film in bulk, 100-foot rolls of film, and then rolling it myself into the little film cans, and much cheaper that way. So,
Well, that's good news, because, boy, taking those rolls of film and developing them could be a little bit of an ouch in the pocketbook.
Oh, at times it was. It practically broke me getting my film developed.
So you had to have a real love affair for it. You had to have the money and the resources to develop your film, buy the film. Now, today we don't have to worry about those things. Photography is just so accessible. Basically, anybody that has a smartphone is potentially a photographer in the making. So does that...
A lot of nice pictures do come out of smartphones. I never use one for pictures, maybe just to record something, But I don't use it. But my wife does, and my daughter does. My daughter's also a photographer. Before we run out of time, though, something I should say is that the reason I'm on the show partly is to talk about Good Friday. first Friday coming up, and just encourage people to come down to the Juneau Artist Gallery and all the other stores and shops that are going to be open downtown on Friday, and see what's going on. It's we didn't close this winter. COVID barely slowed us down. We have a very safe place to come, and we would hope that people would come down and see what's going on. I've put up a special show, 45 years of pictures around Juneau, a big collage on the wall. It has about 70 pictures in it. Maybe you'll find yourself in one of those if you've been around town for a while.
You know, that is just wonderful to have a photographer in a community with that much history in it. And I imagine we have quite a few here. But in your 45 years of photographing Juneau, what have you learned? What do you know about this community that perhaps others don't?
Well, you as a photographer, you look at things in a completely different way. You know, you look at a scene and you don't just go, there's my picture. The scene is going to affect you in some way. And that's what you really want to photograph. You want to stop for a minute and say, what is it? Why am I standing here looking at this thing? What is it about it that got me out of the car and I'm standing here? And so instead of just photographing the scene, you've got some thinking to do to look for the emotion or the reason you're there in the first place. And for most photographers, that's the artwork. That's what keeps you growing and learning, not just pushing the button, but capturing what's behind the reason you're there in the first place.
And the intimacy with the community probably makes all the difference in the photographs. So in your gallery presentation, what are you particularly in love with, particularly proud of, that you're showcasing? So we'll watch for it when we visit.
Well, I have in my permanent display there, I've got some of my favorite pictures, and they're not just from Alaska. I travel a lot. So we've got some Scotland pictures and England pictures and Greece. I think I even have one from a trip to long ago to Afghanistan. But in the special show that I've put together, I've tried to put in a lot of local faces so people can go in and look through, and if they don't find themselves, maybe they'll find somebody they know or some event they went to. You know, I went to a lot of events, both news events but music events and things like that. Just got an idea a few minutes ago for one more fairly big picture to put in there from a show that I went to. So yeah.
Well, of course,
it ought to be fun.
We are missing a lot of live events, and I'm sure that probably draws you out to take pictures. And of course, the Folk Festival is coming up. Will you miss not being able to get out in the crowd and take photos?
Oh yes. Yeah. Shooting the Folk Festival is one of the most fun things because you've got a captive audience. And as I say a captive audience, I don't mean the audience, I mean the performers. They're my captive audience. They are up there in front of you really putting out. And to go for the expressions and the moment or the time out when the people on stage, the two singers make eye contact and, you know, as the end of the song comes up, you know, I love capturing those special moments. And there are a few other photographers in town. I see at all the performances, some that I work with in the summer, who look for the same thing. There's so much emotion there that it's really fun to shoot the Folk Festival. So well, yeah, I miss that.
One last question before we go is, I know that you like to plan your photographs and you have hopes of things coming together at the right moment. What's on your wish list of photos that you have not been able to get yet?
I know I've got some. Pretty much, when I tend to see those photos is when I go out without my camera. So I think of the camera sort of like insurance. If I take it with me all the time, life is calm and peaceful. But if I leave the camera at home, you know, volcanoes erupt, cruise ships sink, all sorts of interesting things happen. So
avalanches, who knows, right?
Avalanches, yes. And I've missed avalanche. Every time I miss a shot that isn't likely to come around again, I just kick myself. I just go, I can't believe I just, you know, didn't bring my camera. I'm the kind of guy who takes my camera with me to Costco or to Foodland, because who knows what's going to happen between here and there.
You never know. Well, Cameron, I want to thank you for sharing some moments with us to talk about the moments that you've captured on your camera. And good luck with your gallery presentation on First Friday.
Yeah, see everybody downtown on Friday. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.